Jimmy? No? No? Yes, I don't have monitor signal. Hello again, and there we are, 12 minutes past 2, a little bit later than we were scheduled, but yeah, we have to rearrange the studio after the DJ session, and here we are in a very beautiful panel with the Queer Geek Show, and I hope you are eager to hear, and I think we'll start with explaining what we're about to do, and GMC, I would like to start with you, because we two came up with the idea of doing a show like this.
Yeah, we did. Yeah, it's just, I don't know how we came to it, but it's fun to be queer, and I mean, it's fun to be it, but it's also sometimes difficult. It's very short, the whole reason I think we did this show, right?
Yeah, I mean, we met on totally different grounds than our sexuality. It was totally for radio reasons we came in touch together, and then I don't even know when it was that the issue evolved that, oh my god, we both like guys. And it did not really change that much in our working terms, but it changed a lot in many other things of our friendship, I think.
Hmm.
And especially the way we look at certain things in the hacker scene, I think, are changed because of our sexuality. And so we had this perfect opportunity here with so much open slots and this channel. Then we just thought we have to do something with it. Okay, I made a joke I didn't even got. Okay. There will be more
that
of them.
It took a while to sink in.
I love those jokes. So let us start. in a totally raining situation, outside the world is ending. I hope this is no sign. And we will totally ignore this, and I hope the listeners can ignore it as well. And I would like to start with introducing my panel here. I have Fabienne opposite of me.
Hello.
Hi. And next to her is Willow.
Hello.
And then there is Jimmy.
Hello.
Hi.
Yeah.
And then right to me is first Mitch Altman. And then at the end of the table is the lovely Martin Hase, Maha.
Yeah, hello.
And I think, Mitch, as you are closest to me, we should start with you. And I still would like to evolve about this issue of why we are doing a show, because I've been asking myself this question, and I also asked you the question, do you think it's reasonable to do a show like this? And you gave the best explanation for me, which totally convinced me that it's necessary and a good thing to do.
Yeah, so, my mic's on? Okay, I can't hear myself. So, growing up queer in a homophobic society, you know, in a society where we're all intended by our parents to be straight, like everybody else, in quotes, makes a lot of difficulties and challenges in growing up. I don't know what it was like for everyone else here, but for myself, I was beaten up every day in school for not being able to pass as being like everybody else. Not just for being queer, but also for being an introverted geek. Being a geek nowadays for little kids isn't so bad as it was when I was growing up. And I'm 54 now, so, and in the United States, I think bullying is a bigger problem than in Europe. But for being different in all these different ways, but a huge part of that is growing up queer, knowing I'm different from all the other boys and from all the other people, not really understanding why and being unable to articulate it, but knowing that I'm different in some big way and being bullied and beaten up for it all the time, I grew to believe I deserved all of this. And you know, I was totally depressed for the first half of my life. I can't remember any situation or a prolonged period of time where I felt good about anything. And that has a huge effect on my life. It also, in later life, enables me to empathize with other people in amazing ways and support other people because I can, you know, I can understand where people are coming from, whether they're feeling good or bad, and try to help them as best I can. But even in situations that I put myself in today, it's still, I carry all of my past pain with me everywhere I go. And also, people who are totally straight really can't empathize with my past experience. And even people who want to be sensitive and nice often say or do things that unintentionally I'm very sensitive to as a result of all of my past experience. So I try to let people know without getting down on people when they say things that I think are insensitive. And I think more people, if they're aware, they might be better equipped to, you know, say and do things in a way that are less button pushing for those of us who have grown up in any kind of similar way, growing up queer in a homophobic society, carrying all this stuff with us. So, I make it a point in all situations that I'm in to try to say something to indicate that I'm queer, because people need to know that people that they respect are queer, so that they can feel better about themselves being queer and not be so afraid of letting other people know more about themselves.
I think that's the central core issue, that somehow you need to tell them, although there's nothing to say.
Well, there is something to say. There's a lot to say. In an ideal world, there'd be nothing to say. You know, like whether I have gray hair, brown hair, or blue hair, it just doesn't matter. That's just a part of who I am and my expression. And other people could care less, or they could care a lot. But in this case, we live in a world where people care a lot. And even people who don't want to get down on other people, we all have prejudices. We're you know, even growing up queer, I was brought up to be straight. And even though my parents never said anything particularly negative about gay people, it was very clear from their behavior, their actions, what they said and what they did, that I was supposed to be straight, and I'm not. So I knew something was wrong with me just because of that. And that's big. There's a lot to say about that. It's ideally, there's nothing to say, but we're not in an ideal world, so there's a lot to say.
Yeah. I want to open up the panel at any time. If any of you has something to say and want to jump in, then please feel free to do. And Willow is the first.
So, I feel like hacking is the deconstruction of any system that other people take as granted, which means that being queer is inherently hacking, because you're not gay and you're not bisexual and you're not whatever, you're just queer. You don't even fit into any category that other people are giving you. You're just declaring outright that you're not anything that anyone has ever said before. And so it's a hacking of sexuality in general. And that's why I love being a part of this community, is because it's a group of people who understand that deconstructing hardware or deconstructing software or deconstructing systems in general means that it's okay to say this about your sexuality as well. And it's one of the reasons that I feel so at home in this system, but it's also very odd because people bring their assumptions with them when they come to interact with this, is that, hey, I'm here, and to use the coin of the term, I'm queer, hey, I'm here and I'm queer, and it's okay, but also that doesn't mean that I will represent all of these things that you assume goes along with that term. And it's okay to also be queer or to be by in that sense. They're just ways of describing where you're at. And that's great. Like, if you can figure out how to describe where you are, that's wonderful. So
would you say that the queer geek scene, or the hacker scene in general, has a particular open way to queer sexuality?
They're better at being accepting of those things. It doesn't mean that they're better at embracing them. Just because they can understand what you're saying doesn't mean that they'll be okay with it.
I mean, in general, I found that the hacker culture is extremely accepting of, as Willow said, like, anything that is different than the norm. This is the first community that I've not had any kind of, like, feeling of being estranged from it by being open with my sexuality. And, you know, back in college, growing up, I also grew up in a very, like, homophobic society, and, like, in the South United States. And, you know, I'm having feelings for guys, I'm very confused, I'm told that this is evil and wrong. Finally, when I went to college, I started experimenting with girls, and then I was like, okay, actually, I'm not gay, I'm bi, and this is something that's acceptable. And even there, even in college, at, like, the LGBT meetings, where I should have felt welcome, the president told me that bisexuality doesn't exist. She told me this, and I was like, but, I mean, no, I actually, I don't know. So, even there, where I thought that I would find acceptance, I did not. But in the hacker community, like, it's, I've never had to explain it or defend anything. And I think that just the inherent nature of, we're taking these things, we're deconstructing them, we're finding out how they work, and we're putting them back together, or maybe it's even, like, just we're understanding, we're learning what this means, in everything from computers to whatever, allows for that openness in sexuality. I've just not found another scene that's been, like, so completely open to it.
I mean, it's very optimistic about the hacker scene, what you just said, and I wonder if Mark can agree with that.
I'm not sure. It's well, I'm I think that there is this openness, and I think Willow has said that very well, that there's acceptance. That's, well, that's quite natural, because in the hacker community you accept people as they are. You don't attach much attention to how people dress. So in that sense, it's open. But embracing queer sexuality, or embracing sexuality as a concept, is something that isn't always easy for hackers. Because lots of hackers can be described as asexual, which would be an aspect of being queer too. But there seems to be quite a number of people in the hacker scene who have a problem with sexuality, and then they have a problem with queer sexuality. That's obvious. So it's not that easy. I remember when I came to the Berlin Club for the first time at the beginning of the millennium, I was openly gay, and there was no question about that, and I felt accepted. But I remember that there was no, well, I had the impression that I was the only one who is gay there. And, that has changed. Nowadays, you can see people kissing, men kissing each other in the kitchen of the Chaos Computer Club in Berlin. And, you wouldn't have seen that 10 years ago.
I think the first thing is to be accepted as you are in a community, but the other thing is to be no longer alone. also in the particular subgroup you are. And I wonder, and maybe there is a big difference between the States and Europe in this case, that maybe in the States you have more queer geek culture than we have in Europe. I mean, partly also speaking as an Austrian context.
With this assumption that we are, like, it's a social construction, and it's not necessarily, it's just a way that people are. And so thinking that it's a group that people belong to is the difference between thinking that it's a flag that people wave to indicate where they are versus a box that they fit into. And it's not necessarily, it's just a way that people are, and it's far more about what people are into and what they relate to other people about than it is about what they say they are. And so you can't... I just noticed you have a troll. troll face pasted up on your wall. But, like, you have to understand that so much of this has to do with what people are interested in, and if that has to do with what they're sexual about, then that's great, but that has just as much to do about the software system that they invest in. Like, if they're about Arduino, or if they're about Mac, or if they're about whatever, it doesn't matter. It's just one more thing about them.
Yeah, and I'd like to jump in about the US versus Europe. I lived in Europe for 2003 now. I lived in Europe since 2003 now, and I'd like to jump in and say, you know, differences between US and Europe. I don't like to do the whole, you know, cliche stuff. I sound very American, but I speak German and French now, but I don't think there's a big difference. I don't think there really is, like, more acceptance in the US or less acceptance in Europe. It happens to be the particular day that you're on and the particular situation that you're in. And you can find situations in what you think are very open states that are very uncomfortable for gay people and queer people, and those of us who find ourselves in a, you know, a different checkbox, then it happens everywhere. And I have good friends that are having, you know, trouble and strife in Scandinavian nations where we think that things are so open and so accepted. And I don't think that things are necessarily more open in any place particularly than any other. And it's the day and the place that you're in that dictates the situation that you're in. And if you're feeling uncomfortable, then you're feeling uncomfortable. And if there's someone who's being not open to the life that you live, then that's just the day that you're in. And it really doesn't have anything to do with the culture or the particular country that you're in. I kind of disagree with that, unfortunately.
I think there are big differences between American culture and European culture in general. Every country in Europe has a different culture, like various states in the United States have different cultures. And there are some places which are much more conducive for me feeling comfortable and for any individual to feel comfortable. We want to go to places where the culture is one we can relate to. You know, and Europe has a much longer history of being accepting of queer people. Which is why, like, James Baldwin moved to Europe away from the United States and so many other people, you know, decades ago. San Francisco is a place in the United States and New York where queer people have felt much more comfortable relating to the cultures there. My experience in queer scenes as I travel around, and I travel around quite extensively. For people who don't know who I am, I've traveled around a lot for the last 4 years, visiting hackerspaces, doing workshops, often with Jimmy, and you know, teaching people how to solder and make cool things with electronics is the main thing. And you know, I'm not closeted at all as I do this, but there are many places where I feel much less comfortable discussing things about sexuality, and every time. No matter what, no matter how many times I've been through this, it's basically coming out again. And coming out is always at least somewhat of an ordeal. And in the United States, there's been much more times where I've felt judged by other people than in Europe. So in all the European scenes I've been in, there might be people who are like, oh yeah, this queer stuff. But they're just more blunt about it and not hostile.
I'd like to jump in for a second that I had some rather hostile situations in New York City. So, and we think of New York City as a very open city for those who are gay or openly bi or openly lesbian or openly queer. And I mean, this is recently, this is 5 years ago, and I had a lesbian tell me that my, you know, being bi was not a valid choice. So having that kind of hostility at, you know, a gay pride parade is a rather, you know, disgusting thing. And I think all of us on this panel would, you know, laugh and think that was really silly. But I you know, it happens everywhere. And I just want to say, any of those who are out there who are listening, who've, you know, felt, you know, negativity, even in a place where you expect to be welcome, it happens, you know, and it doesn't make, you know, it doesn't make it okay. But I would love it if we would all, you know, be accepted for whatever the hell we feel like on, you know, a particular day. And yeah, that's all I have to say on that.
That's why sexuality is so interesting to me. I mean, I'm one of the few people probably here who actually valued their education in some way, and it's because I went to the Kinsey Institute in Bloomington, Indiana, right? It's the largest porn collection in anywhere. Like, there's so much porn there, it's fantastic, but the idea that it's the most intrinsic of value. There are species that actually procreate before they do anything else. They don't even eat before they reproduce. Like, sex is the most basic thing to us as a living organism. And yet, it's also the most socially constructed thing that we interact with ever, period. Makes it this really interesting thing to study, which also makes it a really interesting thing to have to live with. And as long as people understand that it's something that you have to interact with and not just something that you are, is, to me, fascinating. But that's because I'm a scientist. Like, I care about looking at these things from an objective perspective. But that's my feedback as a nerd. Anyway.
I wonder if we could make this hacker scene anyhow more comfortable for queer people, because so far I people feel at home there over the time, but still for me the basic cause of the feeling of separation is that there is a heteronormative society, and to make this obvious, I often point out that there are no gay love stories which you hear as a child. It's always the prince and the princess. It's never two princesses. It's never two princes. Somehow, you don't have this in mind when you grow up, and therefore, you have to reconstruct things to come.
So something as basic as you have two stickers on your laptop, which are, we make porn and we like porn. What do you mean by that?
By that, I mean that pornography as the... It's hard to say in English. How will I put it? It's a kind of ideal. It's also a crucial ideal. But somehow it is for me. I show how it really is, even if it hurts. And it's for me similar to the way I like to do journalism, to really put the spotlight on the one thing maybe no one else is talking about. But this is the story I want to tell. That's my personal reason for these stickers.
Do you understand porn is not that for everyone else?
Of course, but
okay.
Nearly every word is subjective, you know?
Well, yeah, but I'm sorry. I'll not co-opt the conversation, but it's you're making people outside of that social construct of understanding that, like, I love porn. It's fantastic, right? But people outside of that understanding are going to be put off by your on-putting...
This is part of being a hacker, and just the word hacker puts people off. but it also makes people think. And we can make use of this in a very powerful way. The words we choose, it's how we express ourselves. So we can be provocative, and we can... Wow, nice noise. We can be provocative in ways that don't get people very defensive. We can do it in ways that get people defensive and bring it in if we're skilled enough at doing such things. But it can be very powerful to reappropriate these terms for positive ends. You know, just the word queer in and of itself makes some people incredibly uncomfortable, even queer people, because this is the word that they were put down with in a very negative, horrible, powerful way when they were growing up, like myself. But for me, reappropriating that term allows me to feel much better about myself. And, you know, porn, I don't relate to as a word so much myself, but I can very easily see that using that word can mean very different things. So it makes people go, whoa, what is this person talking about? And for there's stickers being passed around all day and all night yesterday of data porn and data love, and the juxtaposition of love and porn that way is pretty interesting to me, and it can mean so many different things. And just putting a sticker on that just says data porn next to a sticker that says data love can be really interesting, what kind of things it can bring up for people. So, you know, I love hacking anything. We can hack anything. We can, as you were pointing out, we can hack ourselves, we can hack the planet, we can hack technology, we can hack society.
The Gibson? Can we hack the Gibson? Never mind.
I missed the
joke.
Reference.
Never
I'm sorry.
Mind.
I also don't know what the Gibson is, but that's what I like about stickers on hacker conferences, because usually they do not offer only one interpretation. You can always read things into them. And of course you will piss people off. The whole hacker culture is not meant to be something to stroke and easygoing. You can tell your parents that you're going to a hacker conference. Maybe not. I mean, we have to freak people out sometimes to do the first step of education. I think sometimes this is necessary.
Well, the hacking culture is a culture that wants to change society, I think. And well, that's why it fits with being queer, because that is another way of changing things. And yeah, being provocative is a good starting point in order to hack society and to change society. And, yeah, that's why such stickers are so useful. Are so well appreciated in the hacker scene, because that makes you think, and just putting stickers on a laptop is already the first step into changing things.
About being provocative and all that. I wonder what people think of the gay prides. I know, for example, in Amsterdam is the yearly gay pride. Of course, I've never been there actually. But there are people, including gay friends of mine, who say, well, that's a bit too much, you know? And although it has been pretty provocative at some years, so... I mean,
yeah, but they
it
have
can
special,
be too much, maybe.
They have special problems there. I went there.
I sort of love it all, but...
they have a rule that nobody must be nude. And
they have now,
When it is hot, people tend to throw off their clothes and jump into the canal, and that's forbidden. And at that point, the police arrives and there's a riot. So that's the problem. And I never understood that. In Germany, there may be that rule, but if it is hot on a gay pride day, there are people who are naked, and nobody cares. But in Amsterdam, well, that's the point where
They went a bit further than just being naked. But
well, this is the thing. Like in so many circles, people have been concerned in social and political scenes about what others will think, and then they start fighting over what others will think amongst themselves, and then tear their group apart. And in queer political situations and social situations, groupings. There's been so many times when you know, back in the homophile movement in the 1950s and 1960s, there was so much concern by the people within it over what mainstream society will think of them. And they did everything they did based on what they thought would give them the most acceptance to this mythical mainstream society, and they were totally ineffective as a result of that.
That's why I think that hacker culture is so primed to be a part of this movement, is because it's not about what you're in juxtaposition to, it's about what you actually believe in. It's not about what you're not, it's about what you are.
Exactly, and, exactly yeah. My point. So in my whole thing when I go around and do workshops is always trying to encourage people and even trick people if necessary into exploring and doing what they love. Yeah. By making it fun to do so, and I can do that by being provocative, I can do it by being kind of ridiculous, by playing a clown, by playing the fool, and just by being enthusiastic, which is very contagious, and doing what I love, which makes my life incredibly worthwhile living for me, and people can pick up on that, and then they want more of that for themselves in their own way.
And that exists outside of anything else, because you're living it for what you live it for. It's not about something that you're living against, which means that if you win in hyperactive bunny ear sense of like parentheses and whatever else, if you live it outside of some other context, it will never catch on because it's not its own thing. Whereas if you live it because it's what you are, which is what I think everyone here does, then it exists beyond that.
Yeah, because we don't exist in, you know, as a teenager, of course, I was rebelling against my parents. So all these things I was doing was, I was in my own teenage mind, whatever, doing things my own way. But I was really doing things against what my parents wanted rather than doing things that I wanted. At this point in my life and for quite a while now, it's, as you say, I'm doing it because I love it and not defining myself about what others think. Of course, I'm still affected by what others think, because that's my background has been so much of being put down by what others think and affecting me in incredible negative ways. And I can't get rid of that no matter what positive experience I've had and how many decades since then. But still, that's not how I define myself anymore, and that's not what motivates me to choose what I choose in my life anymore. And so likewise, the personal reflecting into the social, which is political, if I'm part of a group, I want that group to define itself on its own terms and not in juxtaposition to what I tend to call the dominant paradigm. And the dominant paradigm is basically just society at large, so which tends to be quite a dominating society, especially in the United States, where I'm from. What's better is what dominates better. And that's not how I live my life, and that's not how a group will define itself and behave that I want to be a part of. Any group I want to be a part of is going to define itself on its own terms and not fight against the dominant paradigm, because if you fight the dominant paradigm, it will squish you. The dominant paradigm is really, really amazingly good at dominating. It's been doing it for thousands of years, and I've only been doing it for 54. And I've been trying not to dominate. You know, my intent is to live my life that I love and not to dominate and not to try to out-dominate the dominant paradigm. Whenever I've tried to do that, I just feel awful because I'm fighting something way, way bigger than myself and I'm going to lose. But we don't need to fight the dominant paradigm in order to change society in an incredibly powerful positive way. There's all these niches within the dominant paradigm that are ignored, and we can take root in those niches. We can make the niches. We can grow those niches. Hackerspaces, as I see it, hacker conferences, maker fairs, all these things are within the dominant paradigm, but separate from it. We're not fighting the dominant paradigm. We can even draw from what we like from the dominant paradigm. In so doing, we can encourage one another, support one another in all doing what we love. And by doing so, we create more opportunities for more people to live fulfilling lives. And as that happens, society changes in incredible ways.
But aren't you fighting the dominant paradigm when you don't accept it? When you build your thing in your niche? I think that's a way of perhaps not fighting.
Not fighting, that's the main point.
But I think the dominant paradigm is affected by that.
Dominant paradigm might be affected, but the thing is, if the dominant paradigm might be affected in a positive way, because I see no reason why it can't be a win-win-win situation for all involved.
If we're able to, that's why it's important to understand what we stand for rather than what we stand against, is that if we stand for being okay with whatever comes along, that means that if we win, win being a very loaded term in whatever it means, but it means that whatever we stand for is okay, as opposed to it's just a subculture against whatever is the norm, with a capital N, norm.
And I think in hacker terms, doing and building rather than breaking. And we're actively living what we want to see. And if we do that by example, then other people will be more relaxed to do that around us. And I know that's a rather simplistic thing, a way of putting it, but I think that's just what happens.
Yeah, and we can do this in a way that isn't threatening as well. So if the dominant paradigm, it's almost as if it's a conscious entity. Of course, it's just a collection of conscious beings, each individual. But put together, the society runs in a big picture the way it runs, and it's a fascinating topic all in itself, but it's almost can be seen as a conscious entity that has defensive mechanisms to protect itself. And any culture that endures through time has many ways of getting rid of things that are a threat. And our dominant paradigm in our modern world is really, really good at taking care of threats. One of the main ways of doing it isn't just squishing what is a threat, but by co-opting it. And that is a very, very powerful way of getting rid of any kind of a threat. But if we can proceed in our niches, in hackerspaces, maker fairs, whatever, you know, this is just one realm that we find ourselves a part of, we can proceed in ways that can provide opportunities for those around us to take a part of, to explore how they themselves might lead more fulfilling lives, then that's not a threat to the surrounding culture.
I think that's totally correct. What you're saying, in our modern society, you have the freedom to choose which group, which subculture, which collection of groups and identity parts you want to accept or not. And it's a much better strategy to just ignore those normative factors in our society than try to fight and change them. And you're speaking on a very high macro level, and I would like to come down more on this micro level. And on this layer, I have to point out that, at least from my personal experience, people like you and people like Ma and people like GMC make a big difference, because they show you that you are not only not alone, it's also like, okay, this is how life should look like, yeah? It's a kind of boilerplate of, okay, all these fears I might have about my insecure future and not getting a clear pathway in my life from the society I'm grown up from. I have these role models now, and also not only one, I can choose, but I can see, okay, those people can live totally normal lives, they can be happy, they can even influence many, many people. And this is the kind of, I don't know, the history of side stories. It's like all the gay people we had over the whole history. I mean, usually those stories are never told or never in the conservative circles, especially in my country, in Austria. The gay warlords we had, the gay monarchs we had, no one talks about, and you won't hear it in school. But if you're interested, you can find out. And this totally changes your identity, partly identity, but also your sexual feeling of how you are in the world, because it gives you something very powerful, tradition. And I think the Wikipedia used to have this, or it's even older, this on the shoulders of giants. Partly it's the same thing.
on the shoulders of giants, but in the end it turns out that the giants are dwarves too. There are just many of them. So
yeah, that's the kind of thing I meant. And I think it's time for a short music break, and then we'll be back.
I don't think we have music.
There it is.
This was Viva La Vida from Coldplay from the Life album Left, Right, Left, Right, Left. And we're back. Fabienne sadly isn't here at the table right now, but we have a new guest, Tomate, who is joining us.
Hello.
Hi. And yeah, I've been asking myself where we should we go next, and it was pointed out to me that something I said in the break probably is the best bridging statement, and it's basically that I wouldn't like to be anything else, even if I would meet a magic ghost who could make me whatever heterosexual happy person with children and stuff.
That'd be so boring.
Yes, mostly it would be boring. I mean, there are issues, you know. One of the things which I'm starting to thinking about with 24 now is that I probably never will have children, you know. At least not in this society. I can't imagine that.
You just grow them in a shoebox in the fridge. It'll be fine.
If I could build them, if Mitch could help me to build my children in the hard-racking
yeah,
area.
Yeah, we're actually releasing a kit. we're running a workshop tomorrow on it, you know.
Do we need biohackers for that?
Yeah.
It's not so unrealistic anymore, actually. But yeah, I mean, I don't know, is this whole children thing an issue, or is this also, I mean, many people don't have children and they grow old without bothering about it.
I personally knew I didn't want children when I was 5 years old. I told my parents when I was five I didn't want children, and they never believed me. In fact, when I came out to my mom, the first thing she said through her crying tears was, "Oh, I always wanted little Mitchies." And I was like, "Mom, I told you when I was five that I didn't want children, and I knew I didn't want children." She said, "I know, I never believed you." But yeah, I just don't understand why anyone wants them, because, you know, I love teaching them how to solder, but then I go home. But but whatever, you know, we all make our own choices. If people want to have children, that's their choice. I just know for me, that's not what makes me happy. I have a lot more.